It is good to be with you. I know some of you are back there because you remember my tendency to spit when I talk. I've been working on that. It's much better now. Those choosing the speakers said, when can we put David when he will do the least amount of harm? And they said, camp week. Camp week will work. Anyway, I appreciate the invitation. Like I said, I've been in New Walla for quite some time now. That's not really my only claim to fame. I did preach one time in the presence of the Queen of England. You know, I don't think I didn't tell Marty this because I just wanted to tell it. It's back east doing a special guest deal, and after I noticed this really dignified looking lady, white hair. She had a little blue purse she kept on her arm like this, and she had another lady with her. And after the sermon, I was in the foyer shaking some hands, and this lady and her friend walked out together, and the lady with the little blue purse said, "If that man is a preacher, I'm the Queen of England." So I've been able to put that on my resume. I chose Psalm 37 because I think Psalm 37 speaks to today. If you are... How many of you spend any time at all on social media? There's not going to be any condemnation, okay? I'm not going to say anything bad about you for that. There's Facebook, there's Twitter, there's Instagram or whatever they call that. I don't know what all they all have. But anyway, there's a lot of that going on. And one of the things I've noticed is that there's a lot of anger. There's a lot of division in the country. There are a lot of people who are upset at somebody on the other side of the aisle from them, and they don't mind telling everybody in the world about it. And you cannot make any statement on social media that is innocent enough for that somebody is not going to jump on you for that. Someone made a comment about how they really enjoy their pets. And boy, they heard from people say, "Well, are you making fun of us because we can't afford pets?" Or you've never had a pet attack you before. You know, it's just all sorts of things going on. And really, the people today are fretting over so much. You're familiar with the term fretting and fret? How would you define to fret? To worry? Get discouraged? The New American Standard Translation, the newer one, said basically said, "Don't be concerned about." I looked up the Hebrew word that's translated as fret here because I knew most of us don't ever do that. But every once in a while, I look at a word and I say, I need to know that word a little bit more. And so I looked it up. This word only occurs four times in the Old Testament. It is the Hebrew word that means to burn in anger, to fume in indignation, to harbor resentment, to become vexed, disturbed, to take offense. Does that just describe what we talked about? Social media, the media on TV, all of those things. That is what it's talking about. So the psalmist, David, is speaking to our day in our age. And so as he talks about it, he's going to use this word as associated with evildoers. The only other time that this word takes place, it takes place four times. Three of those times is here in Psalm 37, verse 1, verse 7, verse 8. It occurs in Proverbs 24:19, and again, it is associated with evildoers. People fretting themselves about evildoers. And an evildoer, I think, in our day and age can be defined as somebody who doesn't agree with you. But he's talking about people who are really evil. They're doing wrong. They're sinning. They're breaking the law. And it looks like, in a lot of their cases, they are prospering for it. You know, I look at our political realm, and I see a lot of that. I think the problem with our governing body goes back to the basic word politics. Because politics is a combination of two old words, that poly, which means many, and tix, which means blood-sucking creatures. So anyway, I don't remember where I found that, what lexicon that was in, but at any rate, we have a problem, don't we? Have a problem in the world. We have a problem individually when we watch these people doing these things and we say, why are we even trying? Why doesn't somebody get them? Where is justice for these people? They seem to be getting away with murder, sometimes literally getting away with murder. Psalm 37 is our answer to that. What do you and I, as God's people, do about all of this evil that's in the world? And I want to cover this kind of quickly. I know I have a limited amount of time. What time is the first bell?
I don't know.
Okay. You've been here, what, 17 years? Yeah?
23
years. Okay.
We don't.
Don't worry. Well, I will treat this then as I do Nuwala. I ignore the bells when it's convenient.
When you get to the end, just stop.
Okay, when I get to the end. When I get to the bottom, I quit digging. I'm going to divide this up a little bit. There's some do's and don'ts that David includes here. We're going to look at the don'ts first. First of all, in verse 1, do not or don't fret because of evildoers. Don't envy wrongdoers. The Hebrew poetic style is to say the same thing, but just say it a little bit differently there together. So there'll be a repeat. You may notice that before. You may notice that especially in Proverbs, where they'll say something and then they'll say the very same thing in the same verse sometimes, in the next verse other times. That means the same thing, just worded a little differently. We learn better when things are repeated. Verse 7. Do not fret over an evil man who prospers or carries out evil devices. These are people who are active evildoers. You know what they're doing. You know that it's wrong. Don't fret over that, that burning in anger. Verse 8, then there's another thing we're not to do, and that is we're to keep ourselves from anger and wrath. And then he tells us that fretting only leads to what? Evil doing. Now that's important for us. If you're fretting over something, David just told us, hey, don't start. Don't keep that up. Because fretting only leads to evil doing. You know why that is? You ever get mad about something and you start creating a speech in your head? Boy, if I ever got where I could talk to that person, I would tell them this and I would tell them that. And you've got this all prepared. And you know what happens when you do that? The more you get into that, the angrier you get. You know, and we're told in the New Testament, the anger of man or the wrath of man does not do what? Does not do the righteousness of God. Our anger does not accomplish his righteousness. And David knew this back then. That this worrying about it and fretting about it and steaming over it, that leads only to evil. So we need to not do that. That's the short list. The longer list is the things that he tells us to do. Verse 3, trust in the Lord. And I think we get to the basis of the problem here, the root of the problem with fretting, and that is when you don't trust God to handle it. If you and I are worried about that evil person getting away with it, then we're not trusting God to handle it, that he's going to right things. Also verse 3, to do good, to live your life and be a friend of faithfulness, a friend of faithfulness. I'm going to let you contemplate that later, what it means to be a friend of faithfulness. Because that would be worth an entire sermon just by itself. Verse 4, another do. Let the Lord be your delight. You know, look to God for the things that you can really enjoy. Verse 5, commit your way to God and trust in him. Verse 7, be still and wait for the Lord. That's hard, isn't it? Do you remember another passage that talks to us about waiting for the Lord? Isaiah what?
40.
Right on the nose. I knew you had that, but I would not have asked you. Isaiah 40. Those who wait on the Lord. What about those who wait on the Lord? What happens to them? Verse 31. They gain new strength. And y'all can speak up if you want to. They will mount up with wings like eagles. They will run and not get tired. They will walk and not get weary. You might guess, since I've been preaching for 50 years, there are some things I do now that I do get weary doing that I did not get weary doing 50 years ago. But those who wait on the Lord gain new strength. Waiting on God has always been a test of God. When Moses and the people were surrounded, they had the Red Sea in front of them. They had Pharaoh's army behind them. The instructions were, be still and wait on God. God didn't immediately part the Red Sea. He caused a strong east wind to blow all night long. He kept the Egyptian army at bay during that time. Then the next day, the sea was parted. The children of Israel were being oppressed when Moses was 40 years old. Wait on the Lord. 40 years later, he sends Moses. Partly because Moses wasn't ready to do things God's way. And partly because the people weren't really that much ready to leave Egypt. And we know that because of the fact that every time they had problems after Moses led them out of Egypt, they started a committee, let's go back to Egypt. Wait. Verse 27, turn away from evil, do good. You know, there's no rule against doing good. But we like to get even, don't we? I heard the other day, someone was telling about this older man. And now when I hear that phrase, I know that they're talking about someone my age. An older man was in the drive-thru at McDonald's. Y'all ever do that? They got some long lines, don't they? And they have some speakers that's hard to understand. And they have a lot of things to pick from. And the old man said, apparently I was taking too long, and this woman behind me started honking, and then she started gesturing some rude gestures, and then she started saying some unkind things about me. And I finished, and I went on to the next window where you pay. And while I was there, I paid for mine, and I got the receipt, and I told them I would like to pay for the lady behind me. So they let him pay for her, and he got her receipt. And he pulled up to the next window to wait for his order to be brought out. And when she got to the window, he looked in his rearview mirror, and she found out he had already paid for it. And it brought a tremendous change over her, and she leaned her head out the window, and she mouthed to him, thank you. Just changed her demeanor a lot. And the old man then got his order. He showed them the receipt for the other order, and he got her food too. And then he drove off. And he said, the lesson is, don't mess with old people. We've been around a little bit. Now she's got to get back in line and go through this all over again. Okay. That's funny. I don't know if that happened or not, but at any rate, there's one thing I thought about that story. What that old man did at first changed the woman, didn't it? Isn't that what Paul tells us to do? If you do good to someone who's been doing bad to you, you heap coals on his head. I don't think he's meaning you make him even more irritated. I think he means you warm them up. You warm that icy attitude they have towards mankind and just kind of thaw that out. And the story would have really been better if it ended with him doing something good for her. And it would end better for us if we do that too. Verse 30. Another do. Utter wisdom. Speak justice. Verse 31. Put God's law in your heart. Verse 34. Another one. Wait for the Lord. Keep his way. Verse 37, take note of the blameless man. Watch the upright. This is something to do. Watch for the people who are doing the right thing. We're always watching for the people doing the wrong thing, and we ignore all the people doing the right thing. We saw several idiots on the road today, but we did not remember seeing 100 people doing the right thing. That's the way we are. Then the writer is also going to give us another division of two things. He's going to tell us the fate of the wicked and the fate of the righteous. The wicked, verse 2, they fade, they wither. Verses 9, 22, 34, and 38, they will be cut off. God's going to cut them off eventually. Verse 10, in a little while, they will be no more. Be patient. They're not going to be around forever. They will eventually be called to pay. Verse 15, they will be pierced by their own swords and their bows will be broken. Verse 20, they will perish and vanish like smoke. And verse 35, again, the same thing. They will vanish. One of the things that I have found that a lot of people think about in life is, I don't want to be forgotten. I read some famous sayings of famous people, well-known actors and actresses and political figures, and there was a recurring theme through a lot of those, and that was, don't forget me. Well, they're going to be forgotten, the wicked. But the fate of the righteous, verse 4, they're going to be given the desires of their heart. Verse 6, they're going to experience righteousness and justice. Verse 9, they are going to inherit the land. Verse 11, the same thing. They're going to inherit. What do we think of that when we read that? The Beatitudes? Who inherits the earth? The meek. The word meek is a word that was used to describe a wild stallion broken to halter. It's not weak, it's strength under submission of God. You're taking your will and your life and you're submitting it to God. And he says, you will inherit the land. And that's not to say we're going to get a lot of acreage. We get the best of the world. Verse 11, the fate of the righteous is abundant peace. Y'all remember this TV show Chico and the Man? There's an actor, Hispanic actor, very funny guy, committed suicide. And his last words were, I know this is wrong, but I have to have peace. And you know what? God's promising that to us if we'll be righteous, do the right thing. Verse 18, just like inheriting the land, we have an eternal heritage with God. Verse 19, we have an abundance even during famine. God's going to take care of us. Verse 22, another one, we will inherit the land. Verse 23, we will be established by God. Verse 24, we will be protected from falling and be upheld. Verse 25, we will not be forsaken. We will not be begging. Verse 26, children will be a blessing. Verse 27, another eternal dwelling promise. And just like that in verse 28, we will be preserved for eternity. Verse 29, once again, we'll inherit the land. Verse 31, our steps will not slip. Verse 33, we will not be abandoned or condemned. Verse 34, we will be exalted to inherit the land and see the wicked cut off. We get to watch it happen. Verse 37, the righteous has a future. Verse 38, we have a salvation from God and he is our stronghold. And verse 40, God helps, delivers, and saves us. All through this, David is also interspersing different things, trusting in God, and he will do what he has promised. In verse 12, he describes the wicked's plans. The wicked plots against the righteous and gnashes at him with his teeth. And the verse that follows makes me think about chihuahuas. Anybody got chihuahuas? By the way, I wanted to compliment you on your song leading. I think you chose the only two songs written in A flat that are back to back in the songbook. That was very clever. I like that. Chihuahuas. How many got chihuahuas? Anybody been bit by a chihuahua? Okay, they're about this big, and they think they're about this big, right? I have seen big dogs run from chihuahuas, though. Okay. But when a chihuahua just, you know, acts like it's the king of the world, you have to laugh a little bit, don't you? That little bitty dog. And that's what David says God does when the righteous exercises his anger and his threats. And God laughs at him. Why does God laugh at this guy? Because he sees his day coming. He's not laughing that this man's going to fall. Peter tells us God does not take any pleasure in the death of the wicked. It's just that he sees the contrast there. Here a person thinks they're in charge, and they're gloating, and they're threatening, and they're going to fall. When I was in college, I had an unusual job for Bible majors. I worked with a pipeline company out of Drumright. It was an entirely different world. And I loved it. I profited from it. Those were some really good people I met. I learned a lot from them. But every once in a while, we had a day where things just go wrong for somebody. There's a fellow, Charles. He was still in high school, but he got a job working with us. We took a break during the morning. And during the laying a pipeline, the pipes are all laid out ahead of us, ahead of time on the ground, and then they are held up and they're set on some boards and they're lined up so that they can be welded together. And they will make a pass around there with a weld and they will grind that out. They will make another one. They'll grind that out. They'll make another pass with the welding. And the welding is just melted metal sealing those two pipes together. And what would you expect from going around that so many times? It's going to be hot. We took a break, and nobody wanted to sit on the ground. So Charles walks over and sits down on the pipe that's propped up above the ground, right on top of a weld that had just been finished 2 minutes earlier. Well, it singed a hole in his pants. He jumps up, and I didn't know he could dance, but he danced a lot, and he screamed, and we got a good laugh out of it. Glad it wasn't us. Then we had lunch. Got our lunches. Same story. We don't want to sit on the ground. So Charles decides, I'm going to sit on some of that pipe that's on the ground because I know that that's not been welded yet. So Charles walks over, just plops down one of the pipes. Well, this particular place was a pasture. We just had enough room to go through this pasture. And pastures usually have what animal on them? Cows. And cows, they kind of give back to the earth, don't they? And some cattle had given back to the earth as they crossed the pipeline. And we looked at where Charles was sitting, and we said, Charles, did you look to where you were sitting? And he turned around to look, and he put his hand down. And his hand was put in the same fresh stuff that he just sat in. So now he's disgusted, and he's flinging that off, and we're laughing again. The afternoon came along and things did not get better for Charles. Charles got hot. He had a t-shirt. He had a long-sleeve shirt on over that to protect himself from the sun and for helping with welders. You don't want that stuff flying up on you. But he got hot enough that Charles took that long-sleeve shirt off and threw it onto the back of the welder's truck. The wind caught his shirt, took it into the fan that cools the welding machine, and we hear, vroom, 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 tore his shirt up. And so we get another good laugh. We finally end the day. Charles is back to the same motel that a lot of us are standing on. My best friend from growing up was sharing a room with me. Charles is on the opposite side. And I'm standing out watching Charles get out of the pickup truck, walking towards his room. My friend Bob said, David, let's go get cleaned up and get something to eat. And I said, just a minute. He said, what are you looking at? I said, Charles. He said, what did he do this time? I said, nothing yet. And we looked, we were watching him, and Charles looked over and saw us watching him. He said, wipe that stupid smile off your face. And then turned around, ran right into a porch post. Bam, right in the, and then, so we have to die laughing again. We didn't see Charles for the rest of the day. But at any rate, when you see somebody about to, you know, take a fall, and they've been mouthy right before that, you got to laugh. And God's laughing at their expense because he knows what's happening. But I think more than that, he wants us to know what's going to happen to the wicked. Why do we fret so much about them? Because it's not happening fast enough. So he says, wait. Wait for the Lord. He tells him, wait for the Lord more than once in case his readers didn't catch it the first time. Wait for the Lord. He's going to take care of them. And when he talks about what he's going, what's going to happen to the wicked, the list is short. The list is short because they're going to die. They're going to be defeated. They're going to come to nothing. What about the righteous? A long list of good things for us, isn't there? Because God has so much good for us in blessings. And he wants us to know that. Then, in verse 16, he's going to say something. And does this sound like Proverbs to you? Better is the little of the righteous than the abundance of many wicked. You know what I think? I think David's little son Solomon was paying attention to Daddy. He probably listened to him sing some of these songs. And so a lot of these things found their way into Proverbs as a result. God's saying, don't fret. Why? I've got something better for you. You know, you're fretting at people who are prospering, people who are doing wicked and not seeming to get punished. Listen, I've got something better in mind. You know what that something is better for you and me? What would you tell somebody is better that he's got in mind? Heaven. Yes, it is safe to say heaven, isn't it? He's got heaven in mind. Where are the wicked going to be, according to Revelation? Where are the liars going to be? Outside. And this is just not outside the door. This is just like outside the outer rim of the galaxy outside. They are going to be so far separated from everyone who's righteous. You know, when we look at this and we see some of the things that it tells us, there's a contentedness that we're to have because he says, this is the better way to go. And in verse 27, when he says, depart from evil and do good so you will abide forever. That's more than just a promise. David is going to tell them twice some things that he has observed in his life. I still have troubles getting used to people coming up and talking to me and saying, David, you've been around a long time, so you've probably seen this. I can remember like it was yesterday when I was a still wet behind the ears preacher, being told one of these days you'll be a good preacher, and I was thinking, I already am a good preacher, and I was wrong, I wasn't. I've looked back at my sermons, Marty, and I'm thinking, why did they put up with this? But at any rate, David is experienced. And in verse 25, he said, I have been young, and now I am old. Yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken or his descendants begging bread. And then speaking about God, he says, all day long he is gracious and lends, and his descendants are a blessing. Excuse me, speaking about the righteous there in God's view. David says, you know what? I see the wicked prospering for a little bit, but when it comes right down to it, if the world ruled and there was no God, the wicked would have gotten rid of the righteous a long time ago. They would have killed us out. They would have starved us out. They would have pushed us out. And David says, well, wait a minute. We're still here. And they're the ones that are disappearing suddenly without warning. That's something I've seen in life. And we need to remember that in our age and time, especially during an election year, because the distractions to think otherwise are so, so prevalent. And then in verse 35, David gives us a summary here, and I think he's speaking perhaps symbolically here of the wicked and telling about what happens that he's noticed. I have seen a violent, wicked man spreading himself like a luxuriant tree in its native soil. Then he passed away, and lo, he was no more. I sought for him, but he could not be found. Mark the blameless man and behold the upright, for the man of peace will have a posterity, but transgressors will be altogether destroyed. The posterity of the wicked will be cut off, but the salvation of the righteous is from the Lord. He is their strength in time of trouble, and the Lord helps them and delivers them. He delivers them from the wicked and saves them because they take refuge in him. You know who God cannot save? Those who won't take refuge in him. It's kind of like who can the doctor not help? Those who won't let the doctor help. Those who disobey all of his instructions. Those who won't take their medicine. I still don't understand why some people pay big money for medicines that they will never take. Just recently, I started having some problems with my vision, and I hate the phrase, but I was told by more than one doctor, well, this is common for a person your age. I think we ought to be able to deck the third person that says that to us every time, at least. But anyway, I've heard that so oftentimes, for a person your age. I started hearing that when I was 32 years old. No, 31. I was almost 32. I was 31 years old. For a person your age, one time I sprained my ankle. I was 21, and the lady at church said, well, David, you're not 16 anymore. I've heard this long enough, you know, and it's not going away. It's becoming more prevalent. Well, I had to go to the optometrist. Problems with my eyes, and she told me, said, okay, you've got dry eye. Your eye is not making enough moisture. Your oil glands are stopped up, and they're not making oil, so your eyes are really dry. I have a treatment that's almost 100% effective in fixing that. It's going to cost you $350 per eye. But first, before we do that, do you have an eye mask that heats up? I said, yes, I do. Use that twice a day, okay? I want you to put this particular ointment in your eyes the first thing in the morning, and I want you to get another moisturizer. Put it anytime you feel a little bit of dryness in your eye. And in the evening, I want you to use a lid scrub. My wife had been using a lid scrub, and I thought, that's stupid. Wash rag does the same thing. I found out it's not stupid. It actually does help. And then she said, I want you to put some drops, or Carl Miro drops, in your eyes before you go to bed. Anybody know anything about Miro drops? Imagine a weak acid being put in your eyes, okay? It's kind of like salt water. It makes them sting like crazy. But when they sting, your eyes water to wash that away. So I did this for a period of time. I went back to the doctor's office. She examined me. She had me tell her what the chart said. She looked at it. She looked at my eyes. She had that little thing that looked right into my eyes. And she said, have you been doing what I told you to? And I said, yes, faithfully. And she said, you are one of the very few of my patients that has actually done what I told them to do. And guess what? We don't have to do that treatment. Well, see, she motivated me, though. $700 is big motivation for me. It's kind of like that mom whose son came in from playing in the yard. Mama lost a contact lens in grass, and it was green tinted. And he said, I've been looking and looking and I can't find it. She said, let me go look. She goes out and within 15 minutes she comes back with the contact lens. And he says, how did you do that? She said, you were looking for a little tiny piece of glass. I was looking for $2,000. What are we supposed to be looking for? Other people like us, blameless and upright. We're supposed to be looking for the good in life. We're supposed to be looking for the times when God has carried out his promises for us and when God has carried out his threats against the wicked. We're supposed to be looking for those things. And I have found that you and I usually find what we are looking for, don't we? We see it everywhere. How many times have you bought a car and then it seemed like everybody in the world on the road was driving your car? You know, you get something. I saw four of those today. I never noticed them before. You notice them now. Why? Because you have one. What are you going to notice spiritually? What you have in your heart? What you value? What you've learned from God? Those are the things we're going to see. And when we see those things, we see the wicked even less. We don't notice it. Because you always see what you're looking for, don't you? There's a couple came home from church one time, and the wife said, did you see Mrs. Wilson's dress today? No, I didn't really. You didn't notice that low-cut dress? He said, no, I didn't see that. Well, what about Mrs. Rogers' hat? Did you ever see such an atrocious hat? He said, I didn't notice her hat. Did you notice that Sister Ryan, her shoes didn't even match? He said, no, I didn't see any of that. She said, well, a fat lot of good going to church did you today? We have to look for the right things, don't we? And we have to let God take care of things. I want to close with this, and I know I may be closing a little bit early. I've never had complaints for doing that. In verse 34, he said, wait for the Lord and keep his way, and he will exalt you to inherit the land. When the wicked are cut off, you'll see it. Wait for the Lord and let him exalt you. If you go to Luke 14, you're going to see Jesus making that application when he's talking to the people there. If you wanted to turn there, Luke 14, verses 9 and 10. Let's start with verse 8. When you are invited by someone to a wedding feast, do not take the place of honor, lest someone more distinguished than you may have been invited by him. And he who invited you both shall come and say to you, give place to this man, and then in disgrace you proceed to occupy the last place. But when you are invited, go and recline at the last place, so that when the one who has invited you comes, he may say to you, friend, move up higher. Then you will have honor in the sight of all who are at the table with you. For everyone who exalts himself shall be humbled, and he who humbles himself shall be exalted. Your goal, your assignment for the week, should you accept it, humble yourself. Don't think highly of yourself. Think lowly. Let someone else praise you and not your own voice. Because you and I cannot be exalted by God if we have exalted ourselves first. God wants to exalt us, and the only time he can do that is when we will let him pick us up from where we are and put us where he wants us to be. Don't fret over these evildoers. God's going to take care of them. Do the right thing, because God's going to take care of you. Thank you.